evening to you, Constable.
Evening, cabbie. Not the pleasantest way to spend a night such as this. Walking the beach, eh, Constable?
Or driving a hack, what say to that, cabbie?
I say right you are. I wish I was home in me bed under me covers.
You can't wish it more than I.
I might as well be for all the fares I stand to make. Hey, care for a spot to ward off the chill?
Oh, no, thank you. On duty, you know.
I thought it'd be in Christmas Eve and all. Well, here's to you just the same.
Quiet night tonight. Peaceful-like.
It's the snowfall. Makes the city all hushed and muffled. Oh, hold your horses, old girl. She thinks we ought to be moving on. She may be an horse, but of the two of us, she's got the better end for business.
She's right, too. You won't collect many fares down here this time of night. Nothing but offices, all closed.
Right, then. We'll push along. Try to drum up some business elsewhere. For your own sake, Constable, I hope you don't drum up any for yourself.
It'll suit me fine if I don't.
A Merry Christmas to you, sir.
A Merry Christmas, cabbie.
Happy New Year and many more.
Same to you.
Pardon me.
Watch it there.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I didn't see
just
you.
Just a minute. Where do you think you're going in such a hurry?
Going? I'm not going anywhere. I mean,
the
I was just leaving.
You came out of it is a dead end. All the offices down there are closed this time of night.
I was visiting someone.
Who? Mr. Scrooge? He's the only one who lives down there. Come on now, what's this in your hand?
I don't know.
Looks like a section of bail cord. Where did you get it?
I'm not sure. I must have picked it up somewhere.
I think we best go and inquire about Mr. Scrooge.
No, wait, you don't understand. I was just coming to find you. It's been an accident.
Hmm? What sort of accident?
Mr. Scrooge, he's been killed. Murdered, I
what's
think.
This? All right, sir, come along with me. We'll see about this.
No, no, you go yourself. You don't need me.
Come along now, let's have no trouble.
Please, I don't want to go. I can't.
Stop, sir.
Oh,
stop, I say. Stop.
Good evening, and welcome once again to Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater. Tonight we present an historical mystery thriller entitled The Case of the Murdered Miser. Why historical? Let me explain by reading to you two clippings taken from the London Herald. The first is dated December 25th, 1832. An elderly man was murdered last night in his home on Cheapside Row. The victim, identified as Ebenezer Scrooge, was found shortly after midnight. Police reports state that he had been strangled with a section of bell cord and a stake of holly driven through his heart. The incident was uncovered by Constable Delwood Perkins, who became suspicious of foul play when he saw a man fleeing the scene. After a foot chase, the suspect, identified as Bob Cratchit, was apprehended when he slipped on a patch of ice and was knocked unconscious. An investigation is proceeding. The second clipping is dated 2 weeks later. The trial for the murder of Ebenezer Scrooge is slated to begin Monday in Judge Francis Hawkins' courtroom. The case, which has received widespread attention owing to the gruesome manner in which the murder was carried out, was today made even more sensational with the announcement that the famous barrister, Sir Percy Mason, will be appearing on behalf of the defense. His counterpart for the prosecution will be Hamilton Burgermeister, Esquire. Who was Ebenezer Scrooge? By the evidence of these two clippings, there is now proof that he was much more than a fictional character created to appear in a novel written during the late 1800s. Ebenezer Scrooge existed. He was real. He lived in London, and it was there on December 25th, 1832, that he met a most untimely death. Who was the real Ebenezer Scrooge? Why was he murdered? And most importantly, who did it? To find out, let us go back to the courtroom of Judge Francis Hawkins in the Old Bailey Courthouse in the City of London, where a trial is about to commence. The main floor and upper balconies are packed with spectators, anxiously awaiting the moment when the accused will be brought in and placed in the dock. Up above, in the gallery reserved for the press, two reporters are taking their seats along the rail. One is an older man whose name is Raleigh Fingers. He is a veteran crime reporter who has attended many criminal proceedings and who knows well how to gather up the most lurid details and set them forth in a manner that the readers of the daily tabloids find most informative. The other one, the one taking his place beside him, is a younger man in his early 20s and new at the job. He is a reporter for The Sun, and this is his first murder case. He has small hands and a large head with large brown eyes that seem to take in the room all at once. There is about him a sensitivity that would seem to make him ill-suited for the callousness of crime reporting. Raleigh Fingers likes this young man, even though he is convinced he will never make a good reporter. He calls him Dickie Boy, even though his real name, the one he was born with, and the one that later will become known to all the world, is Charles Dickens.
There, Dickie Boy, I saved you the best seat in the house. You won't want to miss this one. Your first murder trial, and you couldn't pick a better one. They don't always come this highly recommended.
Is that the accused sitting there?
That's him, all right. Bob Cratchit, the murderer. Bob Cratchit, the fiend.
He doesn't appear that sinister to me. He looks rather meek.
Ah, that's your inexperience showing already. Of course he looks that way, sitting there in the dark. They all do. They all want to appear like perfect saints. Don't let that fool you.
He looks quite small and timid.
And those are just the ones most likely to commit murder. The world is always picking on him, you see. And he keeps it bottled up inside until finally the pressure gets too much. Really?
Is that his family sitting there behind him?
That's them. Mrs. Cratchit and the children. Peter, he's the oldest. Then comes Belinda. Next to her, the pretty one with the dark hair and dark eyes. That's Martha. She's the eldest daughter.
What's that she's giving to the little boy beside her?
It's Tiny Tim, so they call him. He's got a sickness, and he's partially crippled. Looks to me like Godfrey's cordial she's spooning him. Combination of opium and treacle. No doubt to quiet his cough.
Poor little fellow.
Ah! And that's exactly what Sir Percy is hoping we'll all think. He's a smart one, Sir Percy is. And he's not above using any trick that'll sway a jury.
Which one is Sir Percy?
My boy, you really are a novice. Why, that's him standing down there in the center of that little crowd, looking like he's got the case won already.
He does appear confident.
And the less reason he has to feel that way, the more he seems to radiate. But look at Hamilton Burgermeister. He's confident too, and rightly so. He knows he's got all the evidence he needs to convict a cold-blooded killer. Sir Percy may have won some cases in the past, but his being famous won't save his client this time.
You really believe Cratchit is guilty?
It's not just me that thinks so. I always look to a much more reliable authority, the betting public. Down at the dog fights and the rat matches, they're betting 20-1 against Cratchit. Of course, the odds dropped a bit when Sir Percy came on, but they jumped right back up as soon as it was announced Judge Hawkins would hear the case.
Is that bad?
Is it bad? Not if you're the prosecution, it ain't. The prisoners at Newgate Hall refer to his honor as the Hawk, owing to his predatory disposition towards those unfortunate enough to appear before him.
Yes, he does appear something like a bird of prey.
And Cratchit is the snake that's about to be pounced on, take my word for it. Not long after this trial is finished, Bob Cratchit, will be keeping an appointment with a rope down in Horsemonger Lane. Sir Percy, is the defense prepared to proceed?
Yes, my lord.
Mr. Burgermeister?
The prosecution is ready, my lord.
Very well. Call your first witness.
The prosecution calls Constable Delwood Perkins.
Raise your right hand. Do you swear that the evidence you shall give before this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Be seated.
State your name.
Delwood Perkins.
And your rank?
Police Constable.
Now, Constable, do you recall where you were on the evening of December 24th last, at approximately 12 midnight?
Yes, sir, I do. I was walking my usual beat through the financial district.
And will you tell the court what happened?
I was approaching the corner of Fleet Street and Cheapside Row when the accused, Mr. Cratchit, came around the corner at a high rate of speed and nearly bowled me over.
What did you do?
I asked him where he was going in such a hurry. He intimated that he was just leaving somewhere. I knew that all the business offices on Cheapside Row were closed, and so I asked him where he was coming from.
What did he say?
He said that he had just been to visit Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge. He seemed quite agitated. I noticed he had what looked like a section of bell cord in his hand. I asked him where he got it, and he said he didn't remember. I became suspicious and suggested that we go and have a talk with Mr. Scrooge.
What was his response to your suggestion?
He suddenly blurted out that Mr. Scrooge was dead. I then insisted that he come along. He resisted, and then he broke free and ran. I gave pursuit, and the subject was apprehended a few blocks later when he slipped on a patch of ice.
What did you do then?
After turning the accused over into the custody of another constable, I returned to the scene of the crime.
That is, you went to Mr. Scrooge's home?
That's right.
And what did you find when you arrived?
I found that the front door unlocked and slightly ajar. I knocked first and then called out, but I received no answer. I went in. Directly, I went upstairs where I found the bedroom door also standing open. I noticed the bed curtains on one side of the bed were pulled back. I found Mr. Scrooge lying in bed. He was dead.
Will you describe for us how the body looked when you found it?
The deceased was lying on his back, with his eyes staring upwards at the ceiling. He was wearing a white linen nightgown and nightcap. There were bruises around his neck that showed evidence of strangulation. The bruises showed the pattern of a braided rope that matched the bell cord beside his bed. A section of this rope was found in the possession of the accused.
Go on. What else did you notice about the body?
There was a piece of wood, about 8 inches long and sharpened into a stake, protruding from the chest of the victim. There was relatively little bleeding around the wound, indicating that the stake had been inserted after Mr. Scrooge had already met his death.
By strangulation?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Did you feel the body?
I did. It was still warm to the touch. Also, the blood was not yet congealed, which indicated to me that the body had not been dead for very long.
How long?
I would estimate approximately 10 to 15 minutes.
In other words, death must have occurred about the same time or shortly before you encountered Bob Cratchit coming out of Cheapside Row.
Yes, sir. That is my opinion.
Very well. Now, tell us, what did you do next?
I went back downstairs and outside. I wanted to make a careful study of the footprints in the snow before the other investigators arrived.
What did you find?
I found one set of prints matching those of the accused, leading both to and from Mr. Scrooge's house.
That was all?
Yes, sir, that was it.
And in your opinion, is that the only way that someone could have entered or left the premises?
That's quite right. Mr. Scrooge's residence adjoins other buildings on both sides and in back. There are no windows except in the front of the house. The front door is the only way into or out of the house.
So, anyone visiting Mr. Scrooge must necessarily have gone down the alley and entered by the front door and left the same way.
Yes, sir. It's a dead end, you see.
Yes, I think we do. Thank you, Constable.
I have no further questions. Your witness, Sir Percy.
Constable Perkins, let's begin with those footprints you found in the snow. You say when you examined them, you found only one set belonging to the accused.
That's right.
Aren't you forgetting something?
No. Unless you mean my prints, of course they were there too.
I wasn't thinking of yours, I was thinking of someone else's. Someone whose footprints should have been present as well.
I don't know what you mean.
The deceased, Ebenezer Scrooge. Why didn't you find his prints also?
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, you see, we've established that Mr. Scrooge came home around 9 o'clock that evening. However, it didn't begin snowing until around 10, when it began to snow quite heavily. So you see, his footprints would not have shown up.
In other words, before 10 o'clock when the snowfall began, anyone might have visited the apartment without having left behind any telltale prints.
Well, yes, but of course we know that the murder took place at midnight, not before.
Because the body was still warm?
That is correct.
I was going to ask you about that. You say that when you arrived, the body was warm and the blood uncongealed, and therefore you were able to place the time of the murder as having taken place 10 or 15 minutes before.
That is my opinion, yes.
When you found the deceased, he was dressed in a nightshirt?
Yes.
The covers on the bed were thrown back?
Yes, they were.
Did you pull them back?
No, I did not.
What was the temperature in the room?
I'm not sure. About normal, I'd say.
The fire was still burning in the grate?
I believe so.
The window was shut?
It was.
Of course, it's true that a body lying outside exposed to the cold cools down much more rapidly than one left inside a comfortably warm room.
Yes.
A dead body in a warm room cools quite gradually, in fact.
Gradually, yes.
And yet, by simply touching the deceased, you were able to arrive at the conclusion that death had taken place exactly 10 or 15 minutes before.
I didn't say exactly.
Could it have been 15 or 20 minutes?
It's possible.
Or 25 or 30 or even 45 minutes? Isn't it a fact, Constable, that the reason you chose 10 to 15 minutes is that it conveniently fits the time frame you have established for when you encountered Mr. Cratchit outside Scrooge's flat?
Certainly not. Of course, I'll admit to some leeway, but I still hold that it was probably 10 to 15 minutes. Clearly, it was not before 10 o'clock, as you seem to be implying by the footprints in the snow.
After you examined those prints, what else did you do?
I went back inside and waited for the others to show up.
Did you search upstairs?
No, sir, I waited.
You didn't even go up?
No.
Look under the bed?
No.
Did you look in the closet?
No, I did not.
Did anyone ever?
I can't say.
Seems a rather careless way to conduct an investigation. But then it's understandable, isn't it? Since you already assumed you had the killer in custody.
We only assume what the facts suggest, sir.
In other words, you investigate the obvious and ignore all other possibilities. My lord, I have no further questions.
Before you step down, Constable, I have one further question. In your investigation, did you examine the windows both upstairs and down?
Yes, sir. They were all locked from the inside.
The front door. Was there any sign of a forced entry?
No, sir. None at all.
The bedroom door, which the deceased normally kept locked at night, that was opened also?
It was.
Therefore, is it fair to suppose that whoever murdered Mr. Scrooge must have been admitted into the apartment by Scrooge himself? That Scrooge must have known the killer personally? Otherwise, it is doubtful he would have let him in at all?
Yes, sir. You might call that a reasonable assumption.
Thank you very much. No further questions.
The prosecution wishes to call Mr. Frederick Applegate.
Mr. Fingers?
Call Fred Who is Frederick Applegate?
That dicky boy is Scrooge's nephew. Old Ebenezer never married, but his sister did. That is her son. I have no idea what he's going to say, but it's certain not to be good news for the murderous Mr. Cratchit.
Mr. Applegate, please tell the court what is your relation to the deceased?
I am Ebenezer Scrooge's nephew.
And do you recall where you were last December 24th at approximately 5 o'clock?
Yes, I went to visit my uncle at his office.
Please tell the court, to the best of your recollection, exactly what transpired while you were there.
I went to see him around 5 o'clock. I knew I would find him there. My uncle always kept very regular and punctual working hours. When I entered, I saw Mr. Cratchit sitting at his desk in the outer room.
A Merry Christmas, Mr. Cratchit.
Merry Christmas, sir.
I trust you are keeping the season well this year.
Oh, yes, sir, quite well.
Who is it? Cratchit, who's there?
It is your nephew, sir.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Bah, humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas. What right of you to be merry? What reason of you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Oh, come then. What right of you to be dismal? What reason of you to be morose? You're rich enough.
Humbug.
Oh, don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. Out upon Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older, but not an hour richer. A time for balancing your books and having every item in them for a round dozen of months presented dead against you. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Those were his exact words.
Yes, sir. He said, boiled in pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
And would you say, Mr. Applegate, that the person sitting in the adjoining room definitely overheard this remark?
Objection, my lord. The prosecution is calling for a conclusion of the witness.
Let me rephrase that. Mr. Applegate, if you had been in the next room, do you think you would have overheard this statement?
Yes, I think so, quite easily.
Thank you. No further questions. Your witness, Sir Percy.
Mr. Applegate, were you aware that your uncle died intestate?
I'm sorry?
Without a will. Your uncle left no will.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, I'm aware of it now. I wasn't at the time.
At the time of your uncle's death?
That's right.
And were you also aware that under English law, and as the only surviving relative, you will be entitled to the bulk of your uncle's estate?
Once again, I'm aware of it now. I wasn't at the time.
Yes. Tell me, Mr. Applegate, who was present in the room when your uncle uttered this inflammatory remark about the holly stake?
There was no one else. There was my uncle, Mr. Cratchit, and me.
Thank you. No further questions.
Objection, my lord. This sort of backhanded, slanderous insinuation is outrageous and totally uncalled for. Mr. Applegate is not on trial here.
Oh, I'm merely pointing out that the accused was not the only person present when this remark was made.
Objection overruled.
Very well, then. In that case, for your own sake, Mr. Applegate, I will ask you to tell us where you were on the evening of December 24th at approximately 12 midnight.
I was attending a party at my own house. I was in the company of my wife, my family, and friends. The party continued until very late. There are many people who can vouch for my whereabouts.
Thank you, Mr. Applegate. I feel we all owe you an apology.
Objection. If Mr. Burgomaster wishes to apologize for his own behavior, he may do so. I am perfectly capable of extending my own apologies when and if they are called for.
I warn you both, I will tolerate no personal exchanges between counsel. Sir Percy, in view of the strength of evidence pending against your client, I think that you will do well to concentrate on his defense rather than your own.
Yes, my lord.
Mr. Burgomaster, call your next witness.
We call Giles Pithy.
Giles Pithy, take the stand.
Who is this one?
Pansy, never saw him before. Judging by the nicely tailored clothes and the silver-handled cane, I'd say he's been eating his bread without crust for some time. Witnesses like these always make a strong impression on a jury.
State your name, please.
Giles Pithy.
What is your occupation, Mr. Pithy?
I'm senior insurance agent for Handlers of London.
On the afternoon of December 24th last, do you recall stopping in to pay a visit on Mr. Scrooge at his office?
Yes.
Please tell us what happened.
I stopped by to pay a call just after 5 o'clock that afternoon. In fact, I remember I was coming in just as your last witness, Mr. Applegate, was leaving. Mr. Cratchit, that is the accused, ushered me into Mr. Scrooge's office.
Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these past 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night.
I have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner. But this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute, who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
They are. Still, I wish I could say that they were not.
The threadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?
Both very busy, sir.
Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I'm very glad to hear it.
Yes. Now, as to the matter of a contribution for the poor, what shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask what I wish, sir, that is my answer. I hope to support the establishments I've mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Good afternoon, sir.
And that is the conversation that took place?
As nearly as I can recall, it was.
Mr. Pithy, let me ask you this. If you're a man whose own family was nearly destitute and whose need for financial assistance was great, do you believe overhearing these remarks would have had an inciting effect upon your mind?
Objection, my lord, objection.
Sustained. Counsel will refrain from posing questions which call for a conclusion of the witness.
Certainly, my lord. I withdraw the question. State your full name for the court.
Martha Cratchit.
A little louder, please, so that everyone can hear you.
Martha Cratchit.
You are the oldest daughter of Bob Cratchit, is that right?
Yes, sir.
How old are you?
16.
You go to school?
No, sir, I have a job.
Who is your employer?
Mr. Higgins, of Higgins Millinery Shop.
Your brothers and sisters also worked?
Yes, sir. I mean, no. Except for Tiny Tim.
Why is that?
Because he's crippled, sir.
No, I mean, why is it that you all work?
Why? Sir? I'm not certain what you mean.
Well, is it because your father did not earn enough to provide for you himself?
Yes, sir. I suppose so.
Martha, is it true that your father resented being paid only 15 shillings a week?
I don't know.
You never heard him complain about the salary he was earning? Remember, you are under oath?
Yes, sir. Sometimes. But not always.
Martha, your brother Tiny Tim is partially crippled. Is that correct?
Yes.
He is also of failing health, is he not?
Yes.
The doctor informed your parents that if he did not receive treatment, very expensive medical treatment, very soon, there was little chance that he would grow up to lead a normal life?
Yes, sir.
Now, Martha, isn't it a fact that your father vowed to you all that he would find some way to raise the necessary funds, no matter what he had to do?
Yes.
Come, come, speak up.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Martha. Your witness, Sir Percy.
Tell me, Martha, has your father ever hit you?
Oh, no.
Have you ever seen him strike your sister, or your brothers, or your mother?
Never, not once.
Tell me, Martha, do you suppose it is fairly common for a man to come home and complain to his family about his job or about his boss?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sure it is.
And that this is rarely an indication that that person is about to go out and perpetrate a murder.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sure of it.
Martha, do you believe your father killed Ebenezer Scrooge?
Oh, no, sir. I certainly didn't. He just couldn't. He's not the sort of person who would ever kill anyone.
Thank you, Martha. No further questions.
Excuse me, Miss Cratchit. If I may be allowed one final question on redirect. Would you agree it is possible for a man, even a mild-mannered man, to be driven to commit a crime such as murder because he finds himself in a desperate situation?
But my father would never...
Just answer the question, please. Would you agree it's possible? Yes. What was that?
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
And so the trial for the murder of Ebenezer Scrooge continued. The prosecution went on presenting its case against Bob Cratchit, laying down additional evidence of guilt, while Sir Percy Mason continued doing everything he could to try to soften the blows. Meanwhile, Sir Percy's trusted friend, Private Investigator Paul Mandrake, worked around the clock trying to uncover some new lead or some small shred of evidence that Sir Percy could use to try to build a case in favor of his client. It was with this purpose in mind that Paul Mandrake stopped into the Boar's Head Tavern, where Scrooge had partaken of his last meal before going home that night to meet his death. The man behind the bar was named Barney Sullivan, a big, burly man with a big, bushy mustache that from the other side of the room resembled a dead squirrel hanging above his upper lip. Or so it seemed to Paul Mandrake as he strolled in from the street and casually took up an empty place at the bar.
Yes, sir. What will I bring you?
A pint of bitter, please.
Coming up.
Isn't this the tavern that man who was murdered... Oh, what's his name? Ebenezer Scrooge. Didn't he used to come here?
That's right, sir. He used to sit at that table over there in the corner. Came in every night at the same time for years. Quite a regular customer, he was.
In all that time, you two must have become pretty good friends, eh?
With him? Not hardly. Fact is, he never even talked to me. He'd come in, sit down, and I'd bring him his meal. Always the same thing. And that was that.
Hmm. He much of a tipper?
Ah, never. He wouldn't have left me a tip if it was to save his life. If you ask me, it was that same kind of attitude that got him killed.
You think they caught the fellow that did it?
I don't think. I knows it.
Oh? How do you know?
Because I saw him. That is, I saw him coming here the night it happened. Scrooge was at his usual table, having his usual meal, and that fellow Bob Cratchit comes slinking in. I hears him talking to Scrooge in a low, imploring sort of voice. Then the old man stands up and points to the door. Get out, he says. Get out this minute.
Did he go?
Oh, he left all right. I saw him, but his face was all splotchy, his lips were tight, and his hands were balled in the fists. He did it all right. Mark me. I'm not saying he didn't have some justification, but he did it. He killed Ebenezer Scrooge.
That was the way it seemed to go. The more Mandrake dug into the case, the more evidence he seemed to find that pointed the accusing finger directly at Bob Cratchit. Still, he didn't give up. Meanwhile, back at the Old Bailey courthouse, the prosecution had completed its case, and Sir Percy, left with no other choice, was forced to place on the stand the only person who could refute the charges leveled against the defendant himself, Bob Cratchit.
Now, Bob, I should like you to tell the court in your own words, and as accurately as you can, exactly what happened when you visited Ebenezer Scrooge's home on the night in question.
Yes, sir, I'll do my best. Of course, I had been thinking quite a lot about the money I needed to raise for my son's medical expenses. I'd already approached Mr. Scrooge earlier that evening about the possibility of a loan. He turned me down. But I felt that if I went to see him once more and really explained my situation, he might reconsider. It was nearly midnight by the time I arrived on foot outside his residence. It was very cold, and I recall it had been snowing for several hours. I climbed the steps up to his front door. I was about to use the knocker when I noticed the door was already open.
What did you do?
I knocked anyway. There was no answer. I began to wonder if something was wrong, so I went in.
Mr. Scrooge? Hello?
I began to feel something definitely was wrong. I closed the door and climbed the stairs to his bedroom.
Hello, Mr. Scrooge? Mr. Scrooge? Are you
at home? At the top of the stairs, I found the bedroom door open just a crack. I opened it the rest of the way. The bedroom was mostly dark. There was a little light coming from the fire in the grate, and a candle was still burning on the nightstand beside his bed. I noticed a half-finished cup of gruel beside the candle. The bed curtains were pulled back on one side of the bed. I could see Mr. Scrooge lying there. The covers were drawn up to his chin. As I approached, thinking he must be asleep, I saw that his eyes were open and staring upwards.
Mr. Scrooge?
Then I saw the look on his face.
Mr. Scrooge!
And I knew something dreadfully was wrong. My first thought was that he must have had a seizure. I drew back the covers just a bit, and I saw the bell cord knotted tightly around his neck.
Mr. Scrooge!
Quickly, I untied the knot, thinking, hoping it would revive him. I threw the covers back all the way, and it was then that I saw the stake protruding from his chest.
Mr. Scrooge!
After that, I don't remember. I must have run from the room, still clutching the bell cord in my hand. I don't remember, Constable Perkins. I don't remember slipping on the ice. All I remember is running. That's the way it happened, I swear it. I never killed him. I never murdered Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Burgermeister, would the prosecution care to cross-examine the witness?
Oh, yes, my lord. Most certainly. We wouldn't miss this for the world. Mr. Cratchit, I should like to go back to the moment when you first arrived at Mr. Spooge's residence.
This was Bob. This was Bob Cratchit's own account of what happened, and although it may have convinced a few of the jurors, it took only a few minutes under skillful cross-examination by Hamilton Burgermeister for them to change their minds back again. It was said that Burgermeister could take a schoolboy reciting the alphabet and make it sound as though he were telling a pack of vicious lies. While Burgermeister was busy discrediting Cratchit's testimony, Paul Mandrake entered the courtroom and whispered something in Sir Percy's ear that made the barrister suddenly sit up. This incident did not go unnoticed by Raleigh Fingers, who nudged the young reporter at his side to pay attention. Burgermeister had no sooner finished his cross-examination than Sir Percy was instantly on his feet requesting an hour-long recess. The motion was passed by Judge Hawkins, who, although reluctant to grant a continuance, nevertheless made it clear that he was always willing to extend any courtesy that would ensure the defendant got a fair trial, regardless of how guilty he was.
All right! Hear ye, hear ye! All persons having official business in the matter now before this court are hereby called to order. His Lordship Judge Francis Hawkins presiding. Court is now in session. Be seated.
Sir Percy, the court has seen fit to grant your request for recess. Are you now ready to continue with the defense?
We are, my lord. The defense wishes to call Davy O'Shanty to the stand.
Call Davy O'Shanty.
Mr. Fingers, who are they bringing in now?
Hard to say, Dickie boy. Judging by the prison garb and the shackles round his ankles, I'd say he's obviously taken up lodgings at Newgate. What purpose he'll serve today remains to be seen.
Mr. O'Shanty, will you state your full name for the court?
Davy O'Shanty.
And will you please tell us where you were on the evening of December 24th last?
I was occupying a doorway in the alley on Cheapside Road, just outside Mr. Scrooge's apartment.
What were you doing there?
Sleeping.
And how long were you asleep?
Till just before I woke up.
Mr. O'Shanty, I think you would be well advised to reserve your levity for some other time.
Oh, certainly, your lordship. I only wish to do whatever I can that'll help serve the cause of justice.
Never mind all that. Just get on with it.
Mr. O'Shanty, what time would you estimate it was when you awoke?
It were 2 o'clock in the morning, sir. I know that for a fact. 'Twere the ringing of the bell in the clock tower that woke me in the first place.
And what did you see when you awoke?
Nothing at first, except the snow falling. Then from where I was, I saw the door to Mr. Scrooge's apartment open and two coppers come out, carrying a stiff.
and were all wrapped up like a Christmas goose. But I figured it must have been Mr. Scrooge, him being the only person living there at the time.
What did you do then?
Well, I decided it might be a convenient time to pay a visit.
In other words, you decided to break in?
Not exactly. I tried the front door first.
And finding it locked?
But then I sort of negotiated an agreement with the downstairs window. It were quite dark once I got inside. There were no lights, but I could tell it were the sitting room. I started to cross over to the door leading to the hallway, and I had to be careful so as not to bump into any of the furniture. When I got to the door, I were just about to open it when suddenly I heard the sound coming from the other side. Someone was coming down the stairs, real quiet-like, almost like a ghost tiptoeing in the dark. I stepped back away from the door, thinking whoever it was coming in. I keeps on listening, and in another minute I hears the front door opens and close, and whoever it was gone. I waited a few minutes more, and then figuring whosoever it was, they weren't coming back, I went about me business.
Thank you, Mr. O'Shante. You have been most forthright in your answers.
Cross-examine, Mr. Burgermeister.
Mr. O'Shante, pray tell us, what was this business that you went about doing?
Well, I sort of helped myself to some of Mr. Scrooge's belongings. His bed curtains and sheets and the like. Stuff he wouldn't be needing no more.
You stole them.
Well, you could say that. Excepting I was always willing to give him back any time he asked.
A crime for which you were later apprehended and sentenced to Newgate. My lord, I see no reason to waste the court's time cross-examining this witness. If Sir Percy wishes to attempt to establish the innocence of his client based on the testimony of an admitted felon, let him do so at his own peril. I will not bother refuting the statements of a witness who would obviously lie as easily as he draws breath. Send him back to Newgate. That's where he belongs.
That may be your privilege, Mr. Burgermeister. However, as magistrate, I should like to pose a few questions myself. Mr. O'Shante, you admit to stealing property from Mr. Scrooge. How do we know that you did not also murder him?
What? Murder him? Why, how wouldn't? Why would I? I didn't even know him.
Do you suppose that all murderers know their victims?
No, look on this. You can't lay this one on me. You can't say I did it. I never killed
him. Bailiff, remove the witness.
I'm not angry with him. I'm innocent, I tell you. I never killed him. I only stole from him. I don't want to end for someone.
Now that we have satisfactorily taken care of that witness, I see by the clock that it is almost time for adjournment. We will stop for the day and resume again tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Court is adjourned.
Good morning, Mr. Fingers.
You're late, Dickie, but I saved your seat anyway.
I read your account of the trial, Miss Bourne, of the edition.
Yes, and I read yours, and if you don't mind my saying so, you're making a big mistake calling on Cratchit's good points. The reading public don't want to know that.
They prefer their murderers to be craven and depraved without too many redeeming human qualities.
But we don't even know that he did it.
That's not the point. The point is, it's our job to report things as we see them. Always remember, we are the eyes for the public. And if the public wishes to see things in a certain way, it's our duty to do the best we can to show it to them.
Sir Percy, is the defense ready to continue with this case?
Yes, my lord. The defense wishes to call Mrs. Belle Langley.
Who do you suppose this is?
Difficult to say, but it looks as if Sir Percy's got something up his sleeve. He's been known to try anything when he thinks he's about to lose a case. Judging by her appearance, I would guess she's been brought in to make an impression on the jury. Perhaps Sir Percy's hoping a little sex will distract the jurors from the truth.
My lord, before I begin, I should like permission to treat this witness as a hostile witness. In other words, I should like to ask leading questions.
A hostile witness? She doesn't seem hostile to me. She appears quite friendly.
Thank you, my lord.
Oh, not at all, my dear. Sir Percy, your motion is denied. Proceed.
Very well. Mrs. Langley, will you state your full name?
Mrs. Belle Langley.
Are you married?
Divorced.
Is it true that you were once a close acquaintance of Ebenezer Scrooge?
That is true.
In fact, you were engaged to be married.
That was a long time ago.
The marriage never took place?
No, it did not.
Why is that?
It was because Ebenezer had grown indifferent towards me. Something else had come along to take his affections.
Oh? Another woman?
No, it was money. Ebenezer was more interested in making money than in loving me. Oh, he tried denying it, but I saw it was true. So, sadly, I released him from his vows.
How old were you when this took place?
I was 18, Ebenezer 36.
Certainly those are understandable sentiments for an idealistic young woman. But isn't it true that 2 years later you married Malcolm Langley, himself a successful businessman, and that 3 years after that, when your husband's business failed and he became a pauper, you divorced him?
Well, I divorced him, yes, but certainly not for the reason you suggest.
Mrs. Langley, following your divorce, isn't it true that you approached Ebenezer Scrooge in a vain attempt to rekindle your relationship?
That's not so.
You deny visiting Mr. Scrooge at his office?
Yes. I mean, no. Of course I went there, but it was nothing more than a friendly visit.
Mrs. Langley, is that the dress you were wearing when you went to see him?
Objection, my lord! Not only is counsel badgering his own witness, but I fail to see what possible relevance this has to...
Mrs. Langley, do you know a man named Fred Applegate?
What?
Shall I repeat the question? Do you know Fred Applegate?
Fred Applegate?
Mr. Scrooge's nephew. Do you know him?
I don't believe so.
Mrs. Langley, before you commit yourself to perjury, I should like to warn you that I can bring to this witness box a neighbor of yours who will testify that she saw Fred Applegate into your apartment every afternoon for the past 6 months. Now, I ask you again, do you or do you not know him?
All right, yes.
You were having an affair?
Yes, we were, if it's any of your business.
Mrs. Langley, isn't it true that Mr. Applegate promised to divorce his wife and marry you as soon as he could raise enough money?
All right, what if he did? But you can't for a minute think that Freddy would do anything. I mean, he just wouldn't. Why, he's not that kind of person.
No, I don't think he is. My lord, with your permission, I would like to ask this witness to step down and call my next witness, Miss Lucy Duffy. State your name, please.
Lucy Duffy.
And what is your occupation, Miss Duffy?
Charwoman, sir. I do domestic work.
Will you tell us the name of your former employer?
Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge.
And how long had you worked for Mr. Scrooge?
About 12 years, sir.
Did your employment terminate at the death of Mr. Scrooge?
No, sir. It terminated about 2 months before that.
Did you quit?
No, sir. I was fired.
Now, Miss Duffy, will you please describe for us what your duties were under your employment with Mr. Scrooge?
Well, sir, the usual things mostly. Cleaning, making up his bed, keeping a fire going in the grate, and setting out his cup of gruel to take at night before he retired.
In all those 12 years, you must have seen Mr. Scrooge quite often.
No, sir, I didn't.
You did not? Well, when was the last time you saw him?
Oh, about 11 years ago it was.
11 years? You mean to say you never saw the man you worked for?
Well, you see, sir, I had me own key. I always came in after he went to work. Sometimes he would write out his instructions in a note he'd leave behind. Once a week he would leave the money on the table in the hallway.
Still, you must have seen him on the day he fired you.
No, sir. One day I comes to work as usual, and there was a note on the door saying, me services were no longer required. The note said, leave the key under the mat. And so I did.
Really, my lord? I'm sure we're all interested in Miss Duffy's employment record. However, I fail to see what possible bearing this has on...
the court's indulgence, my lord. One of the suppositions in this murder case has been that whoever murdered Mr. Scrooge must have been an acquaintance, since there were no signs of a forced entry. However, there is another way the murderer may have gotten in. He may have had his own key.
This is ridiculous.
My lord, the testimony of this witness has just shown that she gave up her key.
She returned it to Mr. Scrooge. He fired her.
How do we know that? Anyone could have written that note. Why would an employer suddenly fire his charwoman after 12 years of loyal service? My lord, I believe that whoever fired Lucy Duffy was someone who was plotting to kill Ebenezer Scrooge. I believe that this person then took over the duties of the cleaning lady and continued performing them while she waited for an opportunity to carry out her plan.
My lord, even assuming by some wild stretch of the imagination that what Sir Percy is saying is true, I submit that a woman could not have strangled Ebenezer Scrooge. He may have been old, but he was certainly not frail. A woman would not have had the strength.
Sir Percy, what did you say to that? Sir Percy?
Oh, forgive me, my lord. I was thinking of something else. My lord, if I may beg the court's indulgence once more, I believe I can clear up much of this mystery, if I may be permitted to call to the stand a witness who has already testified.
Well, if there are no objections...
My lord, the prosecution will stipulate to anything that will move these proceedings along a little faster.
Very well, Sir Percy. Call your witness.
I should like to call Martha Cratchit to the stand. Now, Miss Cratchit, for the record, will you please tell the court where you were on the evening of December 24th last?
The night Mr. Scrooge was murdered?
That's right.
Yes, I remember. I was at Mr. Higgins' millinery shop. I was working late that night.
Just one moment. If the court will allow, I would like to ask the gentleman seated in the back row on the aisle to please stand. Thank you, sir. Tell me, Martha, do you recognize that man?
I, I don't think so.
Oh, come now. You mean to say you don't recognize your own employer, Mr. Higgins?
Oh, yes. I see I was mistaken. That is Mr. Higgins.
Again, with the court's permission, I would like to ask the gentleman at the back to identify himself.
My name is Everly. Jason Everly.
Mr. Everly, do you own a millinery shop?
No, sir, I do not. Like yourself, I'm a lawyer.
Now, Martha, shall we try again? And will you tell us where you were on the evening of December 24th?
Very well. You'd like to know? I'll tell you. I was at Mr. Scrooge's house.
Wait, sir!
Objection, my lord! Your father!
I'm the one who did!
The accused will be seated!
The lord, your honor, don't listen to her. She's not the one.
Mr. Cratchit, you will either sit down and be silent, or I will have you forcibly removed from this courtroom.
Martha, would you care to tell us about it?
Where do I begin? How far back? Shall I tell you how much I despised him? Even as a little girl, he used to pat my head and leer at me with that look of his. I've always hated him. And not just because he kept my family in poverty. I told my parents I worked at a millinery shop. I did it because if they'd known the truth, it would have crushed them. Selling women's hats is not how I earn my living. You see, I am a prostitute.
Oh, Martha.
And who do you think was one of my very best customers? Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge. But you see, he didn't know it was me. He had no idea that the woman he was paying to sleep with was the same one he used to pat on the head. The same one whose father slaved for him every day of his life for such a miserly pittance. Oh, yes, Mr. Mason. You had it figured exactly right. It was I who wrote the note telling Miss Duffy her employment was ended and instructing her to slip the key under the mat. It was I who took her place and continued cleaning his precious house, while all the while I was carefully plotting when and how to do it. Finally, my plan was ready, and I'd only to choose which night to do it. Then, Christmas Eve, my poor father comes home from work and repeats the words Scrooge said about how every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in pudding and buried with a stick of holly through his heart. And I resolve then to do it that very night and turn his own words into prophecy. Never dreaming that in doing so, I would make it appear my own father was the killer. I went to his house around 8:30. I let myself in with my own key. I climbed the stairs to his bedroom. I prepared the cup of gruel he always drank before bed. Only this time, I added a dram of sleeping potion. And then, I hid in the closet and waited. Around 9 o'clock, I heard him come in. He came upstairs almost immediately and got ready for bed. I heard him drink his gruel, and then I listened as he settled down for sleep. I waited very patiently until I heard the heavy snores of his drugged slumber. I came out of the closet. I walked over to the bed and pulled back the curtain. Using a knife, I cut off a section of the bell pull that hung beside his bed. Slowly, I passed it under his neck. He didn't so much as stir. I wanted to wake him so he'd know who it was who was about to end his life. But the effect of the drug was too strong. Then, slowly, I began to tighten on the rope. There was hardly any struggle. The stupor was too deep. Finally, just before he died, he opened his eyes. He seemed to recognize who I was, but there was confusion. Why was I there? He hadn't sent for me. Then, very slowly, he died. Afterwards, I used the wooden stake I brought with me to finish the job. I went downstairs. As I opened the front door to leave, to my own horror, I saw my father coming down the street. I'd only time to rush back upstairs and hide in the closet. He came in and discovered Scrooge's body, just as he said. When he left, I waited until I thought it was safe, and then I tried slipping out once more, only this time Constable Perkins showed up. I hid in the closet until all the police had come and gone. And then, when it was very late, I crept down the stairs and let myself out. When I learned later that Father had been arrested and charged with the crime, I wanted to turn myself in. But I thought, perhaps, when the jury hears what a horrible person Scrooge was, they'll say it wasn't his fault. Perhaps they'll say he had it coming.
Sir Percy, how do you do? My name is Raleigh Fingers. I write for the Herald.
Yes, I know who you are.
Oh, you do. And this is Master Charles Dickens. He's also a reporter for the Sun.
Mr. Dickens, I followed your article in the paper. Very nicely written.
Oh, really? I'm honored, sir.
Sir Percy, I should like to know, if you don't mind my asking, how you managed to figure it out that it was Martha Cratchit who committed the murder.
Mostly it was an educated guess. Once I had established in my own mind that a woman had substituted herself in place of the charwoman, I was naturally quick to suspect Mrs. Bell Langley. Then, as I was trying to figure out how a woman acting on her own would have had the strength to overpower Scrooge, I immediately considered the possibility that he had been drugged. Just as this thought was crossing my mind, I happened to look over and observe Martha Cratchit administering another dose of Godfrey's cordial to little Tiny Tim. Suddenly, I realized who it was that I had been overlooking all along.
Sir Percy, what do you suppose will happen to her now?
What's this? A crime reporter with a conscience? How rare. Well, of course, she will be found guilty, but the sentence itself could be light, especially if you gentlemen of the press get busy and write some sympathetic articles that will make it easier for Judge Hawkins to be lenient. By the way, Mr. Dickens, if you don't mind my saying so, you have an obvious flair for writing. But I'm not sure you are cut out to be a reporter. Have you considered trying your hand at some other kind of writing? Fiction, perhaps? Why not give it a try and see how you come out? You never know.
Listening to Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater's presentation of the case. Theater's presentation of the case of the murdered miser. Tonight's program was produced, written, and directed by Stephen Oney. engineered by John Todd. Original music composed by Mark Birmingham. Assisting in the production were Carol McManus and Scott Dickey. The actors in tonight's play, Bob Nolan was Sir Percy Mason and the cabbie. Jeff Kamish played Hamilton Burgermeister, Bob Cratchit, and Bonnie Sullivan. Carol McManus was Martha Cratchit and Scrooge. Bob Gianferanti was Judge Hawkins and Raleigh Fingers. Neil McGarry was Constable Perkins, Frederick Applegate, and Paul Mandrake. Bernard Willis was Giles Spiffy. Floyd Pratt, Davy O'Shanty. Eva Brodesson, Lucy Duffy. Debbie Oney, Belle Langley. Daniel McLean, Charles Dickens. And Scott Dickey played the clerk and Jason Everly. This program was recorded at HT Recording Studio and is copyrighted by Stephen Oney for Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater. All rights, including rights for broadcast and reproduction, are reserved. This program is made possible with the cooperation of the Public Media Foundation. This is Fred Morey wishing you a pleasant evening and inviting you to tune in again when the fog rolls in on another chapter of Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater.